Hello again, Bob Chaundy here with another Considering Art podcast, in which I talk to an artist about their work and something of their life. Sarah Jane Moon is an artist who specialises in portraits. Her large oil paintings are saturated with colour and explore themes of identity and gender, particularly in relation to the queer community. Sarah Jane was born and raised in New Zealand and has spent time in Japan, Australia and Malaysia. She has postgrad qualifications in art theory and curatorial practice, and she learnt portrait painting at the Heatherley School of Fine Art in London, where she now lives. She's exhibited with the National Portrait Gallery, the Royal Society of Portrait Painters, and the New Zealand Portrait Gallery, amongst many others. She's been featured in Time magazine, The Guardian, and a host of culture publications. She's a prize winner in the Queer Britain Art Awards, and she's got an exhibition on at the moment called A Room of Their Own, Queer Interiors. I spoke with her from her studio in London. Sarah Jane, nice to meet you.
Thank you. Really nice to meet you too, Bob.
Now, you were raised in New Zealand. You've also lived in Japan, Malaysia, Australia. What was the key to your peripatetic early life?
Well, I suppose it depends if you want the long story or the short story. But to keep things relatively brief, I am from New Zealand, and that's where I lived until I was 21. So I left there after university. I did my university studies there, and I went to Japan as I was very interested in Japanese language and culture and had been studying Japanese for a long time, since age 11, which is not uncommon actually in New Zealand, particularly at that time. So I went to Japan to basically spend a couple of years teaching English there, and actually to improve my conversational Japanese. That was the main impetus for going, as I had really good academic Japanese by then, but I sounded like a foreigner who had been trained in a foreign country, if you like. So I really wanted to develop my Japanese and to spend some time there learning more. And so that took me to Japan. I was there for 2 years, and I was based in a very small town in the countryside, sort of west of Osaka. So it was a very particular experience. The program I was on is called the JET program, and some of your listeners probably have heard of it. It's the Japan Exchange and Teaching Program, which is an international program. So essentially the government, the Japanese government, take young graduates from all over the world and place them in Japanese middle schools, junior schools, high schools, so that the students have access to a native speaker. I mean, that was a fantastic experience as a 21-year-old. It was really enlightening. And I was the only foreigner for absolutely miles. So
what's the link between New Zealand and Japan then? Because I don't know anybody in this country who knows how to speak Japanese.
Yeah, so I think people tend to be really impressed here when I say that. I mean, my Japanese is rusty these days, unfortunately, but at one point it was quite good. And what attracted me initially was the sort of actually the writing, which is, you know, the sort of pictographic nature of the writing, where they're sort of like symbols that come from the visual world. So there was an artistic link there. But the link, I suppose, between New Zealand and Japan is an economic one primarily. So in terms of the Asia-Pacific ring, it, particularly through the 80s and 90s, Japan was really important to our economy. Still is to some extent, but I think Chinese is now being pushed more at school, I think. But certainly it was one of the few languages on offer to study when I was in high school, and it was the only one that didn't use a Roman script. So that's what sort of drew me initially to it, and the complexity of it, the fact that you have not only the first two sort of alphabets for the phonetic sounds of the language, but then you have all of the kanji, the Chinese characters, of which you need at least 2,000 to sort of read a newspaper adequately. So that was the sort of challenge of it, and attracted me. But yeah, in terms of the links, we also have a lot of Japanese people living in New Zealand. I grew up with, we had Japanese students living with us, lodgers, as well as Thai students and some Chinese students as well. But there's I guess in terms of the international students that come through New Zealand, that's a quite a big market. And economically, we're quite closely tied, I suppose.
I noticed, Sarah Jane, that you spent lockdown in New Zealand. That must have been a good place to spend lockdown, because Jacinta Ardern closed down or locked down much quicker than most and benefited as a result.
Well, that's right. I suppose the benefit of it was that it slightly delayed the lockdown in New Zealand. And so, unfortunately, my timing wasn't fabulous, because I went with my partner to New Zealand for a year. Actually, we took a year, partly due to the pandemic, but also to spend time with family. But we left about July 2021. So already we'd been through quite a bit of lockdown here in the UK, and things were actually just beginning to open up in the UK. And that's when we headed off to New Zealand, and coincided just as they were really locking down. So actually, an extended lockdown. But fortunately, I suppose, where we were in New Zealand was very rural, very sort of isolated place. We had loads of space. And so the lockdown didn't actually impact too much on our sort of day-to-day existence.
I've seen some of the paintings that you made then, and it's full of vegetation and wonderful scenery, hills and so on. It was a time, wasn't it, when we suddenly appreciated nature much more, and nature appreciated the lockdown.
Yes, I mean, it was, and that's partly what prompted the move to go, really, because at the beginning of the lockdown here in the UK, you know, it was quite an uncertain, anxious time, I think, for everyone. We didn't really know what was happening or what was going to happen. And for the first time ever, I've been away now for 20 years or something from New Zealand, and it was the first time that I couldn't just get on a plane and be there if I had to. And suddenly that psychologically had quite an impact. And I really started to feel really far from my family and the idea of home, really. I mean, it's always a large distance, but usually in the back of my mind, I think, oh, I could be there in 36 hours if I had to. And so for the first time ever, Jacinda Ardern, the PM at the time, did shut the border, even to New Zealand citizens who were living abroad. And that felt really unsettling for me. And that's, I think, when I made the decision to try and go. And it was also prompted by the fact that it was very, very difficult to get into the country. Even at that stage in 2021, we had to quarantine for 2 weeks in a hotel. And there was all sorts of processes around basically making sure we weren't bringing COVID into the country. It was really difficult. And we thought, well, if we're going through all of that hassle to get there, we might as well go for a bit longer and make it worthwhile.
Anyway, so you studied also in Australia, and then you came to the UK and you trained in portrait painting at the Heatherley School of Fine Art. What attracts you to portraiture?
Basically, I suppose through my 20s, I sort of went into the direction of arts management and admin, and I was kind of managing a couple of galleries in Australia and doing a bit of arts writing and a bit of curatorial work and attempting to have a career in that sort of arena of managing other people's art. And it was only when I had a sort of break here in London from doing that, and I was at a loose end, I picked up a summer course at Central St Martin's in drawing, and I believe most of it was life drawing rather than portraiture. And it was the first time since I was a teenager, really, that I had done that sort of drawing from observation. And I realised I really enjoyed it, and it was something I wanted to devote more time to. And then I think I had the sort of mentality where I really enjoy a challenge, and I thought, what's the most difficult thing, or the thing that I could commit myself to that would, I suppose, help me learn in the fastest way in terms of observational drawing and painting. And I thought really portraiture was the thing. And also I was drawn to the sort of psychological aspect of portraiture and the idea of sort of investigating identity and who a person was, but also really the challenge of there's no hiding with portraiture. If you have various shapes or the proportion off slightly, we're so attuned to looking at faces that there's really no getting away from that. And so I thought it is the most difficult thing, so I'll go in that direction. And I simply looked up courses in portraiture in London and came across the Heatherley School of Fine Art and ended up training there for 2 years. They do a full-time portrait painting diploma.
And did you work mainly from life?
Yes, pretty much entirely from life then. I mean, I think if we were going to work from photographs, that was sort of done at home in secret. So I teach now on this course, and we're much more open to people working with photographs.
I mean, the thing about sitters is, you know, you have to rely on their being patient and, you know, sit several times, and a photograph, you don't have that. But if you had a robot, say, who wouldn't mind doing anything, would you prefer life to photographs?
That's a really interesting question. And I think, to my mind, they're really different propositions. So I do really enjoy painting from life, and it's a very sort of social activity, and it's very different. It's very immediate. And you have someone there, and you're really paying attention to the subtleties and the nuance of light and the changing atmosphere. And of course, the changing human being in front of you who's sitting down in a slightly different way each time. And I really enjoy that as an activity. But I suppose my work professionally at the moment is much less about trying to depict that sort of naturalistic detail. It's gone quite far from that. In fact, I suppose I'm relying more on my own decisions during a painting. So I actually use the photograph really as just a starting point, a very loose starting point for a painting. And my work is quite sort of colourful and graphic and bold. And it's not so much about observing that naturalistic detail that you find when someone is sitting in front of you.
Nevertheless, it's quite a responsibility being a portrait painter, I always think. I mean, if you're drawing a picture of a still life of a bowl of flowers or a landscape of mountains, if you don't quite get it right, they're not going to complain. But if you're drawing a human being and you're trying to, A, get a likeness, and B, maybe go further than that and look at some psychological depth, you could get pushback. Have you ever felt uncomfortable in the sense that you might see something in your sitter that they don't see in themselves and maybe they don't like?
Well, it is difficult, absolutely. And it is a responsibility, as you say. I think it always requires a deal of sort of negotiation, I suppose. You know, at the end of the day, when people, I don't do many commissions actually, but when people commission me, they are sort of paying, you want them to be really happy with the portrait.
Yeah, commissions are different, aren't they? Yeah,
they're very different, yeah. And in that case, I will, in that sort of first initial meeting, when I maybe do some sketches and take photographic reference, I will ask them directly if there's anything they're uncomfortable about, because people have the most particular things that they're really bothered by about their appearance or not, you know, and I might not be aware at all of that. So I do try and ask them if there's something in their appearance that they would rather I don't exaggerate, or you know, try and sort of create that atmosphere where they can feel open and honest to sort of say, and also asking them how they'd like to come across as well. In terms of pushback, I've never really had that, and I try and involve people along the way. And if there is something they would like sort of changed or that really bothers them, I will do that to a certain extent. If it's in my ability to do, if the painting is at a stage where I'm able to, because I want someone to love it, really, and they're going to live with it and see it every day. And if all they can see is the big splodge of purple you've put on their cheek that they really would rather wasn't there, then, you know, it's a sort of collaboration more than anything when you're commissioned.
Mm. You came out as a lesbian in your late 20s. What was that experience like?
Well, it was quite unsettling, actually, as I'd never really considered that I was beforehand, and I'd had relationships with men. I guess in your late 20s, you feel you know yourself to some extent. You're an adult in the world. You've been out of school for a decade. You're making your way in the world, and you have a career of some sort. And, you know, it's not really when people typically find themselves. So I was really knocked sideways by it, actually. I was surprised that I've always been, I suppose, open to trying to understand what that was. So I didn't know at the time that I was a lesbian. I just knew that suddenly I was attracted to women, and I thought perhaps that meant I was bi, or maybe I just wasn't happy in the particular relationship I was in. I had no idea what it meant at the time. And so it was really unsettling, and I you know, as many people do when they come out as adults, you sort of have to negotiate that yourself and think about how you might tell the people in your life and all of those things, and reassess who you are, I suppose, to some extent. So there was a lot of questioning and a lot of sort of, you know, I suppose being open to whatever might happen. And it wasn't a coincidence, I think, that at the same time, that was when I went back to painting and drawing and started doing that full time. So I think there was something about really trying to think about who I wanted to be and what I actually enjoyed in life, you know, rather than the things that I thought I should be doing.
So how long did it take you to become loud and proud about it?
Well, I suppose, yeah, I mean, there was certainly a period where I was just sort of deeply confused, I suppose, for a year or two. And also I was in a relationship previously, so I was sort of in the midst of disentangling myself from that. And that happened in London. And then I sort of had no, you know, there was a question as to whether I would go back to New Zealand or whether I would stay in London. But I was midway through this course at Heatherley's, and that's what kept me here, really, was the painting and drawing. And then after a certain time, I realised my life was here and I made friends and I sort of found a community, I suppose, of like-minded people in London. I always think London's a fantastic place to be if you're sort of looking outwards. You know, people don't typically move to London to settle down. They tend to, you know, move to London to, I don't know, reinvent themselves or to sort of find other people. It's a really sort of energetic place to be, I think. And I found a community of women here and like-minded people doing interesting, creative things. And I suppose that took, I don't know, 2 or 3 years, I suppose.
And you now paint a lot of people, friends and acquaintances from the queer community. Is that making a statement? Is it simply a question of raising visibility?
Yes, on the one level, I suppose it is. I mean, on one hand, it's sort of autobiographical in a way, in that these are the people who are in my life and who I want to paint and who I'm intrigued by and want to celebrate. And typically there's something that I admire in people or a sort of way of being in the world that I think is quite sort of bold. And usually their work comes into that as well, whether they're writers or musicians or actors. But they tend to be people I know or people I'm sort of intrigued by or fascinated by, or that recently I painted Peter Tatchell, for example, and I just think he is a fantastic example of someone who has so much integrity and so much commitment to what he's done.
And bravery as well.
And bravery, yeah. And I feel a slight, I suppose, debt to him, as when I did come out age 28, I never felt any shame or stigma around that. I just wanted to know what was going on with myself, I suppose. Once I knew that I was a lesbian, I was very happy to sort of be, you know, I never felt complicated about that. And I realised that that is because of people like Peter, historically, who have done so much for our community.
Well, you've now been included in the Pride Power list, and you've had films made about you that have celebrated the LGBTQ plus community. Do you see yourself as something of a role model now?
I do. Occasionally, there are sort of high school students who sort of study my work for a project or something, and that's always quite flattering. But yeah, I suppose, I don't know, a role model, that seems sort of rather grand in a way, but perhaps for some people. I mean, I am conscious of the fact that I grew up in a very small town in New Zealand. It was quite suburban, and I didn't know many gay people at all. I didn't know any artists, I don't think. You know, it wasn't particularly sort of cultural upbringing, I suppose. And I wonder sometimes if maybe I had more people from the LGBT community in my life, or if I'd known more artists, I might have had a sense of what was possible, perhaps. So I do think that, you know, hopefully me being vocal and visible about my identity, you know, it might sort of spark something in someone, or make them think, oh, that's not a problem. Or, you know, if they're sort of in a more closed community or even living in a different country or something like that. Yeah.
You said once that you used to use colour subtly, but you changed to being loud and exuberant. Is your settling on and worked out your identity, were the two related in some ways?
I think more than being related to my identity, the use of colour, I think that was really just about learning to paint in my own way. So I suppose training at Heatherley's and working from life and learning to look for those sort of subtle nuances and tone and the facets of colour through the head in terms of portraiture. That was really so much about learning to handle oil paint and learning to mix colour and all of that. And we were looking, of course, training in this country, you look at a lot of post-war British artists like Freud and Kossoff and Auerbach and Bacon to an extent, although it's sort of, you know, and Sickert and the sort of kitchen sink school, and there's not a lot of bright colour in those images. And I realised that I was sort of subduing my palette. I realised that I really love colour, and it really excites me visually, I suppose. It's not that it sort of makes me happy, but there's something I find really dynamic about the use of bold, saturated colour and the interplay of that. And I didn't feel, I suppose, coming out of that course as though I could use colour in the way that I wanted to. And so it was a process, really, of trying to let myself do that and, I suppose, give up something of what I had learned.
There's a certain graphic quality too about it, isn't there?
Yes, I do. They are quite sort of graphic. I don't know if that comes from my sort of time in Japan or looking at Japanese prints, that kind of thing. Mm. But I do, yeah, increasingly enjoy that sort of delineation of form.
Okay, let's talk about specifics now. There's a portrait I noticed of Ursula Martinez, who you drew in the nude. Was that, I wondered whether that was a way of sort of counteracting the idea of the male gaze?
Yes, it absolutely was. Mm. So that was part of a show that happened around 2018. I think we first staged it. It was called Threesome, this exhibition. And essentially it was myself, Sadie Lee, who's another painter, and Roxana Hall. So we're all painters. And I suppose at the time I was thinking if I could show with anyone in London, who would it be? And I realised it was Sadie and Roxana, and both of them are out as lesbians, and their painting is influenced by their sexuality as well and their identity. So we're all sort of doing, I suppose, similar things in different ways, but we're working in the same area. And so we decided to do this exhibition together. And what we did actually was paint ourselves and each other. So, for example, I had a sort of a triptych, I guess, of one painting of myself, one of Sadie, and one of Roxana. And I set them all in the studio, and the others had different sort of themes, if you like. So Roxana's were sort of to do with film and women in film and lesbians in film in particular. So she had all sorts of characters behind us in the portraits and particular colours as well. And Sadie's were more in keeping with her work, which is sort of the semi-clothed model or sitter, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I noticed you put two semi-clothed nudes behind her in the picture you did of her.
That's right. So my take was sort of to set us all in our studios and have us holding something that pointed to painting. So Sadie is holding a marl stick, Roxana has some brushes, and I have a palette knife. So I was trying to think about us in terms of our agency as painters, as women, as a sort of authors of images, I suppose. And those pictures, those nudes behind Sadie, happened to be what she was working on in the studio at the time. So there are elements there. I was beginning to take elements from life and also invent other elements. So the colours are all sort of responsive rather than observational. But this show, so we painted ourselves and each other, and we did it in secret, if you like. So we hadn't shown each other the paintings before the private view. So the three of us arrived at the private view and suddenly saw these images of ourselves for the first time, which was terribly distracting on the evening.
Were you happy with what they'd done on you?
Well, happy is a sort of relative term, I suppose. I mean, I think it's wonderful when you paint other painters because typically they hand over total control. I mean, I was very willing to say, I love Sadie's work and Roxana's work, and I was very willing for them to use me almost as a model or to do whatever they wanted. And I know that for me, that's when the best paintings happen, when I'm given freedom to sort of explore any themes I'd like to. So certainly I was sort of captivated, and it was very distracting at the private view because you'd be talking to someone but sort of trying to look over their shoulder at the image of you behind them. But alongside those portraits, we also decided that we would try and engage with this idea of the female nude, as you say, because we realised that as women and as lesbian painters, we'd sort of avoided the idea entirely because of its connotations through the history of painting, and because I suppose the genre itself is so saturated with women sort of lying across sofas, you know, sort of looking off into the distance and sort of available to the male gaze. We really wanted to see if we could paint the female nude in a slightly different way, actually. And we wanted not to sort of just engage a model to work with. We wanted to find someone who actually had a relationship with their body that was particular. So Ursula uses her body a lot in performance work, in fact, and she's very comfortable sort of nude on stage. And that's part of her performance, really, part of her work that she does is to do with the nude as well and to do with being unclothed. So we approached her and she was really interested in being involved, actually. And we made a painting each of Ursula. And again, we didn't show each other during the production of these paintings. So on the private view, we were able to see them for the first time. And again, they all have slightly different settings and themes.
I thought it was interesting, actually, that she looks a bit uncomfortable in your depiction of her.
Right.
Is that because you were sort of maybe depicting something inside rather than outside?
I don't know. I mean, my aim in that painting, she's basically, it's a large painting. It's 154 by 124, something like that, centimetres. And there's not much in the background. It's a relatively plain sort of green background. And she's sitting on a stool, entirely nude, with her hands resting on her knees. And as I work from photographs, I'd taken a lot of photographs of her in her flat, on the stool, standing, sitting, all sorts of things. And I tend to take my photographs from quite a low vantage point. So I'm sort of looking up at her. And I wanted her to be sort of powerful, I guess. I wanted her to be in control, powerful, dominant almost. So she's slightly sort of looking down at me as the painter. And that's what I was going for, really, was someone who was, I suppose, just quite sort of present in her body and at ease with that nakedness. But I'm not sure where the uncomfortable nature comes from.
Apart from likeness, obviously you put lots of other things in some of your works, you know, objects behind. Have you got any examples of works that you've done where the objects refer directly to the subject?
Yes, I mean, in terms of portraits of people, there tend to be, you know, I ask them if there are any significant objects they would like in the background, if it's a commission or something like that. Sometimes that's particular books or, you know, I've painted a surgeon and there was the surgeon's medal and, you know, so there are sort of things like that that can refer to an individual's life. When it's my own personal work, I tend to also include references occasionally. I mean, I'm doing less of that at the moment, but certainly before about 2017, there would often be significant books or perhaps some still life elements in terms of flowers. In terms of that threesome exhibition, the self-portrait I painted was me, again, sat on a stool in the studio, clothed, but behind me was a vase of flowers the painting itself is also called Lords and Ladies. And this vase of flowers is lifted directly from a painting by Gluck, the early 20th century lesbian painter. And she was in a relationship with a sort of society florist called Constance Spry. And so there's a period in her work where she has all of these wonderful, lavish bouquets of flowers. And I mean, these flowers, and particularly the Lords and Ladies, are quite sort of sexual in nature. They're kind of ambiguous. They're sort of quite phallic. And so I wanted those in this painting to sort of point to my sexuality. Behind me on the other side is a painting that's in progress of my partner, sort of half nude, if you like. She's in jeans, but topless. That was in progress. And so it's sort of a double portrait, but it's also about sexuality and... Yeah, I suppose I was trying to sort of work something out in that painting, perhaps.
You have an obsession with shoes as well, I think, don't you?
Well, many people say that. And again, I wonder if it's because I do like to take my photographs for paintings from quite a low position. And so inevitably through the camera's distortion, the shoes become quite prominent. But I do love painting shoes and feet, actually. I love the sort of just the character of them as well, actually. They do, so trainers particularly say so much about someone, or brogues, or whatever they are. Yeah.
In your current show, A Room of Their Own, which is at the moment showing in Lewes in Sussex, it's called A Room of Their Own, Queer Interiors. And someone described it as an ode to queer domestic life. I just wondered what the difference between queer domestic life and anybody's domestic life is.
Well, that's a really good question. And I suppose this, I mean, it's the thing that makes those paintings queer, if you like, is the fact that I'm gay, I suppose, as a painter. So they're seen through my
lens.
Yeah, if you like. And I worked with two friends of mine as the models for the paintings, essentially. So this was, in the last few years, I've been painting portraits, quite sort of formal portraits, but that have quite sort of abstracted background, if you like, sort of field of colour. And I've slightly dispensed with that narrative sort of setting up of a scene or an interior. And increasingly, I've been interested in coming back to that, or trying to create a scene, or to paint about, to sort of try and evoke a mood, I guess, rather than making paintings of individual people that are about them and who they are in the world, their identity. I've been interested in trying to paint people, but in a way that, I suppose, where they're not portraits, to sort of work with people in paintings and create something of a scene or an atmosphere. And so in about 2020, the paintings in this show span from about 2020 to this year. And it's a body of work that I created because I wanted to sort of experiment with working with people as models, but to try and depart from that as well. So to bring some of my own decision-making into that process. Also, the two people that I worked with, they are a couple, and they also run a design studio called PL Studio, and they work with and make the most amazing sort of interiors. So we took the photos for the paintings in their flat, and they have one wall that's pink, another wall that's sort of diagonal black and white stripes. They have all of this amazing sort of exciting colour in their environment, and I was really sort of prompted by that and excited by that. And I suppose I do know some other people from the queer community who do have quite exuberant interiors, or have, you know, I guess colour is a big part of that, and maybe sort of quirky objects and various different things. I think in one of those paintings, there's a brass cheetah that the person in the painting is holding. And there are various sort of allusions and kind of a bit of symbolism there with the pomegranates and the books. The books tend to reference queer history, or they might be by, you know, gay authors. There's a bit of reference to Bloomsbury in there as well, given the Sussex connection. But really, I was trying to push the colour and create. But I suppose they're queer by virtue of me and the people I was working with, and the sort of sense of exuberance or slightly sort of anarchic take on the interior.
And what have you got coming up, Sarah Jane?
Coming up, gosh, that's a good question. I think I can say that I have a portrait in the Royal Society of Portrait Painters, and that's in May at the Mel Galleries. And that's quite a large painting, so I'm pleased to have that on show there. I am doing an exhibition in July with an organisation called Queer Arts, which is K-W-E-E-R. And we last did a show at the end of 2023 called Unapologetic Sexuality in Mayfair. So some people might remember that perhaps. So this is our second incarnation, and I'm looking forward to that. And also the Contemporary British Portrait Painters is a group that I'm involved with, and we show every 2 years at the department store in Brixton, and that's going to be in June. So I'm happy to have a couple of paintings in there.
Well, well done. And you're going to run a half marathon with a broken toe.
Well, yes. We'll see how that goes. It is my first ever half marathon, and I have very low expectations. So I fully expect that I might walk half of it, depending on the toe.
Well, good luck with that and everything else. Thanks so much for talking today.
Thank you very much for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
Sarah Jane Moon, and I'm pleased to tell you that her half marathon was successfully completed, bad toe and all. Thanks for listening. This is Bob Chaundy saying, see you next week.